This is Beth Ludwig from Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from the March 2011 edition of Good Housekeeping magazine. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Our first article is the Ask Heloise column. Our first question: I have a pair of leather gloves with a cashmere lining that I've used for years. How do I thoroughly clean them, both inside and out? Here is Heloise's answer. Clean the outside just as you would any good leather. Wipe with a microfiber cloth dampened with water only. It works like magic to remove dirt and mud. Then turn the gloves inside out. One hint, use the fat end of a chopstick to push the fingers through and slip a small can inside the hand part of the glove to keep it open. Squirt a bit of baby shampoo into 1/2 cup warm water and whisk to make suds. Gently clean the cashmere with small amounts of suds on a microfiber cloth, but don't over wet. Take a fresh cloth, dampen it, and wipe to remove the soap. Leave the gloves inside out till dry. Next question. I tried to remove dried nail polish from my wood coffee table, but now there's an even larger whitish stain. What can I do? Answer. Unfortunately, you'll probably have to refinish the whole table. If you're not a DIYer, go to a professional furniture refinisher. If the spills were fresh, I'd say let it dry. Trying to wipe it when it was wet just spreads the stain. Then use a cotton swab dampened with acetone polish remover to lift the polish off. Next question. I put my husband's shirts in the washer stain-free, and they came out with huge greasy spots. How do I get rid of these stains? Here's the answer. They could be caused by a variety of things, including excess liquid fabric softener, or even a broken seal on your washing machine tub that is letting some substance seep into the water. Try 1 cup of sudsy ammonia in the washer with one shirt and no detergent, and run a load, use warm to hot water, depending on the label of the shirt, air dry and check. If the stains are gone, use this method for an entire load. If they're still there, or if more appear, your machine may be the culprit. If it's under warranty, call for repair inspection and show the technician the stained shirts. How it worked? The writer writes in, I used the sudsy ammonia and the stains were gone. Here's another hint from Heloise. DIY dog toy. Cabby, our miniature schnauzer, loves to play with things that make noise. So I save and rinse out thick plastic bowling pin-shaped creamer bottles to give her as toys. Thanks to their scuttling sound, she has a blast pushing them around the hardwood floors. Of course, for safety reasons, we watch to make sure she doesn't chew them. Now for the health section, good health, smart ways to stay well. Good to know, headache help. Doctors have given migraine sufferers Botox for years. Now the FDA has officially approved the treatment, which means that insurers are more likely to cover it. Age does bring wisdom. In a recent study, participants in their 60s were better able than younger folks in their 20s or 40s to see the positive side of a stressful situation. Time it right. Blood pressure meds taken at night rather than in the morning improve hypertension control and better protect you from heart attack or stroke. I'll repeat that. Blood pressure meds taken at night rather than in the morning improve hypertension control. driving while overhearing. Uh-huh, yep, really? We don't need scientists to tell us how annoying it is to overhear one side of a cell phone conversation. But new research from Cornell shows that it's even worse than irritating. It interferes with attention more than hearing both sides of a chat. So while you might think it's safer to have a passenger answer your cell phone while you're driving, researchers said it could interfere with the attention skills you need to use just in order to stay in your lane or to respond quickly to a traffic light change. So let your ringing cell phone go to voicemail and make it a rule that kids have to put their calls on speaker. That should get everyone off the phone. Don't get high too often. MRIs and ultrasounds prove what your aching muscles have told you. Wearing high heels, in this British study, at least 2 inches for about 60 hours per week, make Achilles tendons stiffer and shorten muscle fibers. You needn't dump the pumps, limit wear to 4 days a week, and occasionally kick off shoes to stretch for 5 minutes. Point and flex your toes, or stand on a step of the balls of your feet and lower your heels till you can feel a pull in your calves. Here's a question a reader wrote in the health section. How can I tell if my food has been genetically modified? You can't, is the answer. You can't, with rare exceptions. Regulations don't require that consumers be alerted. However, it's likely that anything made with corn, cereal, cooking oil, and hundreds of other products, or soybeans, salad dressings, protein bars, etc., have been modified. Want to be sure you're buying unaltered food? Choose organic. By law, it cannot be modified. As for those genetically altered fast-growing salmon you might have seen on the news last fall, the FDA was still considering whether to allow them to be sold as we went to press. Talk about payoffs. A striking 38% of breast cancers, 45% of colon cancers, and 70% of endometrial cancers could be prevented if we all did just 3 things. Followed a plant-healthy diet, exercise, and maintain a healthy weight. This is from the American Institute for Cancer Research. Good fish for you. The next time you're shopping for seafood, check out your choices before buying. Simply text the word fish, followed by the type, say tilapia, to 30644. The nonprofit Blue Ocean Institute will text you right back to alert you if this fish has high levels of mercury or PCPs, contaminants that pose a health risk. The message will also tell you whether it's a sustainable species, so you'll know when your selection is safe for your family and for the planet. RX for trouble. How to be sure the prescriptions your doctor orders is the drug you get. This article is by Beth Howard. Your OBGYN prescribes Fosamax to protect your thinning bones. Your pharmacy gives you Flomax, a drug used to treat prostate condition in men. The mistake might be funny if it weren't potentially so dangerous. Flomax can cause blood pressure to drop significantly. While such errors are fortunately rare, pharmacies do slip up in plenty of ways that could be risky. And it happens often. Mistakes occur with 1 out of every 5 prescriptions, a 2009 study from Auburn University found. In hospitals, 18% of patients are victims of medication errors. Safety improvements, such as electronic prescribing and barcode systems, are coming into use, but you still need to take steps to protect yourself. Here's how. At the pharmacy. In the Auburn study, the largest category of mistakes were incorrect transfers of doctor's instructions on the drug label. There were alarming omissions, such as leaving out "take before dinner" on a diabetes drug, which could lead to your blood pressure spiking after the meal. Other mistakes include failing to warn patients about risky drug combos. Be safer. Ask your doctor about any instructions when she gives you a prescription, and remind her or the pharmacist of your other medications in case there could be a conflict. And while out-and-out drug mix-ups aren't common, it's worth checking that you receive the right order, and if the prescription is a refill, that the pill looks like your previous batch. If you're taking a medication long-term, try not to refill it the first week of the month. That's when many people receive their government assistance checks and get their prescriptions filled, so pharmacists are on overload. Deaths due to medication errors jump 25% at the beginning of each month when entering the hospital. Many errors occur during admissions, a new study from Northwestern University reports. Patients may be too stressed to remember all their drugs, but failing to mention a medication can lead to serious complications if you receive a new drug while in the hospital. So be safer. Download My Medicine List at safemedication.com. After you've filled it in, print out a copy to carry in your wallet. You may not be planning to go to the hospital, but an accident could land you there. While you're a patient, in a recent study from the University of Sydney in Australia, hospital nurses were interrupted 53% of the time when they were giving a patient a drug, with mistakes, like measuring out the wrong dose, rising 12% with each interruption. Be safer. Make sure the nurse checks your ID before she administers medication. Then, unless you have a question about an unfamiliar pill, let her do her job. Wait till she's done before asking her anything else. When you leave, changes are made in the medication regimen of some 96% of hospital patients, reports a study from Duke University, yet fewer than half are explicitly told about the changes, and once home, many people go back to taking their old meds. So be safer. Compare your discharge papers with your home medication list and ask about any discrepancies. Then be sure to review the drugs you have just been prescribed with your regular doctor. Good advice. My kid did what? How one mom's tough love turned her child's darkest moment into a lifelong source of self-esteem. This article by Kate Brostrup. Adolescence is the time in a person's life when a young mind opens, a friend commented, and the brains fall out. He was thinking of his own child, of course, but I could sympathize. My children also did things during their teenage years that were, is there any way else to say it? Stupid. Luckily for them, my memories of my own youth remain clear enough for me to regard stupidity as normal and generally transient feature of adolescence. In fact, even the worst of my own kids' misbehavior didn't come close to some of the stupid things I did when I was young. So when my 14-year-old daughter was arrested for shoplifting, I wasn't happy, but I wasn't shocked. I had been away from home all day, so the arresting officer, Sergeant Hall of the Camden Police Department, hadn't been able to serve my minor child with the summons for her crime. He released her into the care of a friend and instructed her to have me call and arrange a meeting. She was very polite, Sergeant Hall told me over the phone. Good to know, I said briskly. Now, Sergeant Hall, there are some things we need to discuss. Sergeant Hall, who was very polite, responded warily. He was bracing himself, he later told me, for the parental responses he was used to getting. How could you arrest my child? She stole a $7 bottle of hair dye. Is $7 really worth the trauma of being carted off in a police car? This might affect my child for life. And if she has a criminal record, this might affect her chance for getting into college. Did you think of that? If $7 is so important to Rite Aid drugstore, I'll go and pay it right now. Do you know how much we probably spend at Rite Aid? And do you have any idea who I am? I want you to know, Sergeant Hall, that my adorable daughter is up in her room weeping with shame. Do you know how toxic shame is? There were other people around when you dragged her away. That's public humiliation. Can you even imagine what this has done to her self-esteem? We certainly will be meeting with you tomorrow, Sergeant, and I suggest you have your supervisor present. We will have our lawyer. My daughter, Wooly, her given name is Anne, though it's rarely used, was indeed up in her room weeping. I had no doubt that she felt ashamed of herself, and her self-esteem had taken a pretty good whack. But this is what I said. Listen, I said to Sergeant Hall, I'm sorry my daughter has done this. We'll be at the police department tomorrow at 11, and this is what Wooly is going to be doing between now and then. The lesson of looking back. When it came to her parents, Wooly had two advantages, though she might not have considered them so. The first was her mother had really been an awful kid. The other was that her mother was a member of what is called the law enforcement community. When I was young, I stole from our local drugstore all the time. Once a week, at least, I'd walk in with a dollar, buy a couple packs of gum, and leave with my pockets bulging of fountain pens, comic books, candy bars, and trinkets. In case you're wondering, I think my kleptomania was indeed a result of low self-esteem. Unfortunately, it was also the cause of low self-esteem, for on what can a thief base her opinion of herself? No matter how often my parents might assure me of my lovability, the girl in the mirror knew the truth. When I was Wooly's age, I was stealing hair dye, eyeliner, lipsticks, a bottle of Jean Nattei perfume. Unlike Wooly, I was never caught, let alone arrested. 30 years later, the smell of Jean Nattei can still bring forth in my conscience a deep shame. I reformed eventually. I grew up and became what my offspring assured me was the strictest mother in Maine. My present work combined two potential symbols of this rectitude. I was an ordained minister who served as a law enforcement chaplain, and my daughter had committed a crime. I was not displeased that Wooly was ashamed of herself for the time being. That was a healthy sign of a functioning conscience. On the other hand, I did not want my beloved daughter to feel ashamed 30 years down the road. In a very real sense, I was determined to protect her from the self-esteem and the toxic effects of shame. This meant Wooly was going to have to be made even more unhappy in the short term so that in the long run she would know herself and trust herself. Now, Wooly had already experienced punitive consequences. She had been arrested and taken to the police station. Hadn't she suffered enough? No. Because I worked with the cops, I was aware that Sergeant Hall had no power, none to meet our to give consequences to my daughter. The most he could do was already done. He could place Wooly under arrest, put her in handcuffs, though because she had been polite, he had not done that. He could file a report, and he could serve her with a summons in the presence of a parent. That was it. While it seemed obvious, you'd be surprised at how many people expect the police to be surrogate moms and dads. But a police officer does not serve as a parent. The officer called to deal with an out-of-control six-year-old. This really happens. Can't put her in the timeout chair. They can't even touch her unless it's to protect her from others or herself from danger. Sergeant Hall couldn't ground Wooly or take away her allowance, nor could he reassure her, tell her she was a good person. Only Wooly's parents could do these things. Parents also frequently assume that the sight of a police officer will be enough to intimidate a teen. Baby boomers remember the Chicago police riots of 1968, the movie Serpico, or the videos of Rodney King episode. If I lack this automatic defensiveness, it's in a large part because I know so many police officers very well. Not only am I familiar with the limitations of their role, but it's easy for me to regard them as human beings, essentially decent, well-meaning men and women who share my hope that all the children in the community will grow up safely and become decent, well-productive adults. Apologizing and then some. So although I haven't personally been acquainted with Sergeant Hall prior to Wooly's arrest, I approached our initial telephone conversation with the confidence that he was my ally, not my enemy. Once Sergeant Hall was convinced the same was true about me, we were able to make a plan based on the facts that both of us sincerely wanted Wooly's crime to be her last. The next morning, promptly at 11, Wooly and I presented ourselves at the Camden Police Department and were ushered into the sergeant's office. For a man with a rather sweet face, Sergeant Hall was doing a splendid job of looking dour and uncompromising. "Well, Wooly," he began, "what are we going to do about this?" Wooly took a deep breath and told him what she had done so far. "I made a list of everyone who had been disappointed and hurt by my behavior. Then I wrote a letter to the manager at Rite Aid and to each one of the clerks there saying how sorry I am for stealing from them. And I used the word stealing," she explained. "Mom wouldn't let me use the word shoplifting." "I see," said Sergeant Hall gravely. "So you've already mailed these letters?" "No, Mom wouldn't let me mail them. She says if you do the crime in person, you can apologize in person." Wooly's voice shook slightly at the memory. For 20 long minutes, she had been miserable on the sidewalk before the courage to go in the store. "Ah, yes. So this morning, Mom and I went to the store and gave out the letters, which was really..." "They were nice about it, sir," Wooly assured him. "I just felt bad. I told the manager that I wouldn't come into his store without a grown-up for a whole year, and at the end of the year, I will ask to be permission to be a customer again." "This is about repairing the damage you've caused. You are going to do the right thing." Sergeant Hall caught my eye and coughed. "I offered to do something for the store, like clean up or something," Wooly continued, "but the manager said they couldn't let me do that because of insurance rules, so I'll volunteer at the hospital for a year instead." Faced with this gawky vision of adolescent contrition, Sergeant Hall's mask was beginning to slip. The corners of his mouth twitched. "And what else, Wooly?" I prompted hastily. "Well," said Wooly, "I told him, too, that, of course, I would plead guilty if there's a trial." "Is there going to be a trial?" she asked. "Probably not," said the sergeant. "Which is not the issue, Wooly," I interrupted. "Remember, this is about making things right with your community. This is about taking responsibility and repairing damage you have caused. The law will do whatever it has to do. You are going to do the right thing." Wooly nodded. "Oh, yes. The thing is, I told the manager I wouldn't lie about what happened in court or whenever, because lying is wrong. And Mom said I should give you this." Wooly produced a letter from her pocket. "It says how sorry I am for putting you in a position where you had to arrest me for doing something stupid. I'm really sorry, Sergeant Hall." "Thank you very much," Sergeant Hall said as he gazed at his letter. He was getting mushy on me. Time to wrap things up. "Wooly, why don't you go out into the hall so the sergeant and I can discuss your fate?" Wooly gulped and went out. "Oh, my God, what a great kid," Sergeant Hall burst out as soon as the door closed. I didn't argue with him. I was her mom. Of course I thought she was a great kid, one unlikely to be destined for a life of crime, no matter what Sergeant Hall and I did or didn't do. Still, Wooly and I have agreed that the episode was an extraordinarily educational experience. My daughter learned that stealing wasn't about the value of what was stolen, but about the injury done to the relationships with the people in our communities. She realized that stealing from a store was really stealing trust and goodwill from her neighbors. Most useful of all, Wooly now knew how to rectify her errors by taking responsibility, offering compensation, performing service, and apologizing fully, truthfully, and personally. Wooly not only restored the original relationship, but strengthened and expanded them. Wooly has grown out of this brainless adolescence and is 17, one of the nicest young adults I know. She is still in touch with Sergeant Hall, and to this day, I can't pop into Rite Aid to buy pantyhose without the employees asking about my daughter. "Such a nice girl," the manager says. Wooly also remains on friendly terms via Facebook with her probation officer, to whose minimal supervision she was indeed remained for a period of a few months. I took a situation Wooly already found difficult and made it more so. That wasn't at all easy. Only love was powerful enough to overcome the maternal instincts that seek to protect the young from pain. I insisted that Wooly atone for her errors because I loved her. Wooly is now one of the most trusted young people in the community. More important, she knows that she can trust herself to do the right thing. Can there be a better definition of self-esteem? Ask Peggy. First question. A coworker who's known as the office gossip has befriended you on Facebook. Is it okay to ignore her request? Here's Peggy's answer. Totally okay. Ignoring someone's Facebook request is no big deal, nor is it rude. While you have no obligation to join her in Facebook land, a sincere, gracious refusal would be thoughtful. Shed some light on your reasons for turning down her request based on your circumstances. I'm glad we can visit at work, but Facebook is where I keep in touch with family and longtime friends. Thanks for asking of me. Next question. Some of my colleagues keep way too much food in our office fridge, so others don't have any room. Can I remind the overstuffers that the fridge is meant to be shared? Here's the answer. Go for it. Check with your supervisor first, then send an email with a friendly request. It's time for an office fridge reminder. We have limited space. Please keep your brown bags on the small side. Also, I propose that we stage a monthly clean-out day. Everything not labeled and dated gets tossed. Question. At your daughter's high school basketball game, you hear a father from the opposing team shouting vicious remarks at your daughter. What should you do? Answer. Ignore him, but cheer even louder for your daughter. Go, girl. It's tough not to ask the other parent to tone it down, but don't. Reacting to his heated comments could easily lead to a confrontation. Instead, tune him out and cheer enthusiastically for your daughter and her team. Do you crush a crusher? Your coworker crunches ice all day at the desk next to yours. Do you ask them to stop? Peggy says, definitely. It's the little things like clicking the pen, tapping your foot, that drive others crazy. Try this. Josh, you probably don't even realize it, but your ice crunching is distracting. Here are some quick tips. Double duty for cooking spray. Spritz a little on a squeaky door hinge, then swing the door back and forth to work it in and quiet the creaking. Wipe away any drips with a paper towel. Rain boots keep the wet out, but the sweat in. So, what do? The day after the newspaper has done its job, remove it and generously sprinkle it with some odor-absorbing baking soda. With your hands, you'll want to wash them when you're done, work it into the lining of your rain boots. Leave several hours or overnight. Take the wellies outside, turn them upside down, and bang them together to shake out excess powder. It's fine to leave some behind. It'll keep on working. If they still smell a bit stale, spritz them with an extra strong fabric odor eliminator like Febreze Sport. Keep the boots fresh between rainy days by slipping in soft cedar shoe inserts, basically cotton sachets filled with cedar chips. This will help absorb the odor. A quick tip to freshen your microwave. Heat a lemon inside in a bowl of water for 2 to 3 minutes. The citrus smell will make your microwave feel better. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode from Soups to Nuts. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Beth Ludwig, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long until next time.